welcome and ho, 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 and happy holidays. This is Populist. I'm Steve Hafer. This is episode 28. And with me, as always, is the boo-boo to my Yogi, the spridle to my Chim Chim, the Stewie to my Brian the dog. That's right. It's Kirk Chutner. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm feeling very Sybil right now. I've got multiple personalities.
Yeah, so do I.
How you doing, everybody? Welcome to Top 10 Animated Television Series of All Time. We really hope you're drawn to this one.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Hey, don't put me in a cell.
Okay, I'm just going to try to erase that you ever said that.
You can't because I'm inked on this show.
So you think.
As you guys might be able to tell, this is a topic that is right in our inner seven-year-old's wheelhouse. I had a lot of fun, again, doing the research on this one. And the problem I had, I don't know if you had it too, was trying to keep an eye on what is a cartoon and what is animation. Because every time I started to look at something, I started going down the road of the old cartoons that we used to love and forgetting that there's a whole wealth of new animation out there.
Yeah, but both are fair game. You would have been fine either way.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm just saying I kept turning to the left. I kept turning to the past with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it was really a discovery for me to realize how much animation was out there these days.
Well, like a lot of our things, especially when we do music and movies and whatever, it's a wide ranging category for sure. And I could have easily put together a top 30 or 40 in this because, you got the 10 and, man, there's so many great, great, great shows that I couldn't include. And, you might have them on your list. Our guest later might have them on his list. You know, they're going to show up because they're really great stuff.
No, absolutely.
For me, I was looking for great storytelling and characters, for sure. Good, animation appropriate to what the intent of the show was. You know, it doesn't have to be works of art, but did it fit with what they were really trying to do? And does the show engage me through either comedy or drama? Because let's face it, a lot of these things, especially nowadays, are as much drama as they are comedy. They handle a lot of serious subjects. And then kind of as a tiebreaker is, did it have historical importance within the genre or did it have a lot of longevity? So it was tough. And that's just kind of my criteria.
I used some of that too. I love longevity. Now that we're into a second and third and fourth wave of animation for television, I think, I really did look for impact. I wanted to see where these shows came from and what happened in the early days to influence, newer shows like a South Park, like a Family Guy, like American Dad, et cetera, et cetera. Where did they come from? Because I think there were a lot of cartoons in the earlier days when we were kids that really were very multi-leveled, that you could enjoy them as a seven-year-old. But if you saw them again at 27, you'd appreciate them not only for the humor it reminded you of, but you saw a whole new level of sophistication and even a little bit of subversion in there.
Yeah. My list covers old and new. It covers stuff intended for children and stuff definitely intended for adults or more mature audiences. The cartoon characters in all these things, they can easily attract children, because it's cartoons and children are naturally attracted to that. But most of the best animated TV series are really made for adults. And it's not going to be ending anytime soon, I think. I think it's a trend that's here to stay. I think we'll see things that had been regular movies or TV shows remade as animation as we go forward. We'll see. It's a broad new world.
Yeah, I think it's along the same lines as everything these days is there's safety and value into taking existing properties and rebooting, reimagining, et cetera, et cetera. Titles, you look at something like a Scooby-Doo. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been relaunched 5 or 6 times in different ways just because the characters are familiar. But let's give it a different look. You can look at how many times has Batman been done on the big screen in different ways with reboots and reimaginations of them. I think the same thing is going to happen with popular cartoon series as well, or they'll just keep running because we're in a golden age of long running cartoon animated television series right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a feeling that we might both be mentioning one particular show that's just been running forever.
There's one that's obvious, but you look at something like a SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. SpongeBob's been on for a number of years as well. Oh, there's absolutely a lot of other titles on smaller networks and things that have been running for 10, 12 years too. You know, maybe only 10 episodes a year, but it's still a long running series.
Yeah. Well, let's get into our discussion. But before we do, let's set the over under for this week. And I guess you get the honors this time.
The over under.
Oh, man. I'm going to go for common titles, not exact matches. Common titles, I'm going to say 5.5.
Yeah, I got to take the over.
All right. You've got the over on 5.5.
It's going to be 5 or 6.
For exact matches, I'm going to go 2.5. Because I think we've got one that's a lock.
I know, but we've thought about that before a couple of times. Both you and I have been, we've been wrong. Yeah,
but I can't imagine that we don't have at least one that's a lock. So I'm gonna bet that there's at least another one just coincidentally that we match up on somewhere along the line.
But you said 2.5, right?
2.5, yeah.
Okay, I will take the under on that one.
Ooh, okay. All right, I like this.
Because I've learned, especially in the last couple of weeks, that we might have the same thing, that they belong there, but we slot them differently. So we'll see. Okay, well, basically, as we discuss these things, I kind of saw it as, for purposes of our discussion, 4 different kind of subgroupings. We kind of have the old school classics. We have the kids programming things. We have the adult and older family shows of prime time. And then we have the world of anime also. And I'm going to tell you right now, with the exception of maybe 5 things, I'm not real versed in anime because, 1, there's a lot of it. 2, I think it's really targeted more for people a little under our age range. I know both my sons, especially my younger son, who's just about to turn 20, you know, he likes anime a lot, but even he doesn't get too buried in that world.
It's funny when you talk about anime, is I'm not a big fan of it, yet one of the shows that is on my list is anime.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it when I was 8 years old watching Channel 44, KBHK in San Francisco, and you had the Speed Racer Kimba the White Lion Hour.
Right.
Right. I didn't realize that was considered anime at the time. Now, granted, today's anime versus 40 years ago anime is I think stylistically much more extreme, and the storytelling is much more dramatic and over the top,
yeah,
as it were. But a lot of the stylings were the same and the art techniques were the same. So while I'm not crazy about anime, one of my favorite shows is, you know, technically anime.
Right. There's been progressions, obviously, like with anything. So you see something like Speed Racer or Kimba the White Lion or Marine Boy, which was part of that group.
God, Marine Boy. I'd forgotten about Marine Boy.
He chewed the gum that gave him oxygen in his lungs. It was great. Yeah. And the electric boomerang. It was awesome.
Oh, my God.
But there's that.
Mike DeVerts, wherever you are, we used to go to his basement after school and we'd watch all these shows on Channel 44 because his family had a television set with UHF, because up till then I just knew about CBS, ABC, NBC, and KTVU. That was it. So here's this magic box that has more channels.
Right.
I was in heaven. Yeah. And KBHK, Channel 44, ran all of those cartoons.
Right. But going back to the point, you had those things and then it progressed to like Pokemon and those type of anime. And then Dragon Ball Z came around and things started getting really, you know, intense and very.
Yeah. The Last Airbender.
Very cinematic. Yeah. Which is actually one of the few American animes. It was done in the anime style, but it's American, not a Japanese product. It's interesting. Yeah. I too will have an anime on my list and then one in my honorable mentions. The honorable mentions is going to be very important to me because, like I said, I could have easily made a top 30 on this one.
Oh, sure.
Before we continue, we did into the unlisted, but since we said that we will both have one of those on our list, what are some of the unlisted things that you will not be revealing on your list today?
Un listed.
I will not be talking about, or I will not be listing, Beavis and Butthead.
Mm-hmm.
I will not be listing Futurama. I will not be listing Family Guy.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I will not be listing Superman, even though I do love a good action hero. I will not be listing Pokemon. So that is one of those animes that will not be on my list. And I, too, will not be talking about Futurama. I probably should have said something else because you said it, but you know what? That was on my list. So let's talk about the old school classics. Obviously, it's what we grew up with. There's things that were there before we were around, you know, like Popeye and Heckle and Jekyll, Tom and Jerry, Woody Woodpecker. You know, then we, in our childhood, was in times of Hanna-Barbera. They struck with the Flintstones, the Jetsons, you know, Yogi Bear, Rocky and Bullwinkle was there. What were some of your favorites back in the classics days? And superheroes, a lot of superheroes.
You just mentioned a few of them.
Superman, Spider-Man, Justice League.
And one that I wanted to find a room for on my list and didn't, but Tennessee Tuxedo and Friends.
Yeah.
I always loved Tennessee Tuxedo.
Yeah.
It was one of those wonderful moments of childhood clarity when I put two and two together and realized that Maxwell Smart was also Tennessee Tuxedo. Mm-hmm. That Don Adams did the voice. I just thought they were clever. I liked the shows that, you know, much like Rocky and Bullwinkle, Tennessee Tuxedo and Friends, that were almost like variety shows.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just a 30-minute single story, but they had individual storytellings. I don't know if you remember Klondike Cat.
Sure.
And his adversary, savoir faire is everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love those little kind of, you know, 8-minute bite-sized cartoons, and you get a commercial for a toy that you'd want, then you got the next one and you had no idea what it was. It was like, oh, it's Commander McBragg, or it's Klondike Cat, or you know, any of a number of others.
Quick Draw McGraw,
absolutely.
Snagglepuss, I
absolutely love. Speedy Gonzales. Yeah.
Exit stage left.
And I also loved, you know, for still talking old school, things like Wacky Races. Mm-hmm. Josie and the Pussycats, the Archies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when, you know, we were first coming of age, and you kind of like the rock music influence of it. You know, it was just interesting stuff. And then of course, Scooby-Doo, you know, has to be in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Bugs Bunny, we were talking about, and little kids, sure. You're talking about all those various friends and other characters that had little mini shows within the bigger show. Bugs Bunny would have to be king in there as well. Also the action hero, the superhero stuff, even though I'm not putting Superman on my list, I loved it a lot. Spider-Man, Aquaman, the Justice League, you know, Batman, all those things.
Oh, yeah.
They're all really well done. Even Super Friends, which was an odd show, had the Justice League in it, but it had that, what was it? Wendy and Marvin and Wonder Dog or Super Dog or Wonder Dog, I think it was. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Flintstones, the Jetsons, Yogi Bear, Rocky and Bullwinkle, they were all go-tos for me in the after-school department, along with Speed Racer. I also love Tom and Jerry to a degree. My 19-year-old, who actually kind of, he was the one who pitched this idea to us early last season. He's still a huge Tom and Jerry fan, especially the original things. He will admit that the newer version is not quite up, but the original is, you know, as good as any Buster Keaton or Keystone Cops or, you know, any of the old type of comedy duos.
When you were watching cartoons as a kid and you mentioned Tom and Jerry, and I'm thinking like Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
There were a lot of adversarial cartoon, yeah. You know, cartoons based on adversaries. Did it ever strike you as an 8-year-old that you were watching something violent? Because a lot of these could be construed as really violent things. I mean, the coyote was roughly killed 8 times an episode.
Yes.
When he went up against the Roadrunner. Tom and Jerry bringing out giant mallets. I mean, they were literally trying to kill one another. But it never struck me like that. It just looked like it was rough and tumble. What was your take?
Well, I agree. Tom and Jerry, I remember to this day, mom or dad or somebody saying, you know, no, you realize this is all a cartoon. They, you know, they can't be heard that there's this. But for Wile E. Coyote, to me, I think it was one of the best PSAs for don't do this, because he was always horrible things was happening to him. And though, you know, even though he came back, he didn't really put two and two together. Like, oh, he's back. You go, okay, he just fell down this 500-foot ravine and there was a little cloud of dust. Poof. So things could not have gone well. Or he got creamed by a train coming out of the, you know, the tunnel that he just painted and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, he ended up being Jaws from the Bond films. Fall down a mountain, stand up, brush yourself off,
right.
Go back after your adversary.
Right, exactly. And let's just all be thankful that Jaws didn't have a little sign that said yikes on it or anything like that.
Now, did Jaws ever order anything from the Acme company?
No, but you got to love that.
The fact that we're, you know, 50 years removed from it, we still remember that.
Oh, yeah. And I love the fact that Disney with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, they paid homage to that whole Acme thing. And
oh, yeah.
When you're in the warehouse and you'd see the portable holes and the big mallets and the shoes that would run by themselves and stuff, you know, it was great. Another one of the classics that I always forget about them, but then when I remember it, I was like, man, I love that show. Johnny Quest.
I was just going to say Johnny Quest.
Yeah. One of the first adventure things.
I love Johnny. Only ran one season.
I know, but man, what a good season. And then another one that I absolutely loved was the Pink Panther.
Oh yeah.
Love the Pink Panther and the Inspector, which is based on Inspector Clouseau, and the Ant and the Aardvark, which ran with it. It's Jackie Mason was that fantastic voice. Hey, Ant.
No, I love Pink Panther. I love Johnny Quest. You know, thinking a little bit more recently, I have to admit, I don't watch a lot of these. I mean, there's way too much to watch. You'd be in your basement, you know, 24/7 if you watched all of this stuff. But there really has been a resurgence right. In animated material for Star Wars. You know, whether it's the Bad Batch, whether mm-hmm. it's the Clone Wars stuff, you know, any of the things they've got going on. A lot of superhero stuff, a lot of X-Men stuff that's out there as well. Marvel really tried mm-hmm. to get into the business as well. And some of the Walt Disney mm-hmm. efforts of the 80s and 90s, things like DuckTales. Again, I haven't seen, but people really speak very lovingly of, and kids from that area have a fondness for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And saying Disney, that's a good transition into kids programming. Because obviously that launched two networks in Nickelodeon and the Disney sure. Channel. And then other networks have glommed on, but those two are the giants in the industry. You know, things like you mentioned SpongeBob, The Fairly Odd Parents, I think is a fantastic mm-hmm. show. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, spawned a huge merchandising boom for a while yeah. there. Arthur, Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack. I love Samurai Jack.
Have you ever seen that?
Samurai Jack's, it's amazing. It's incredible. Kim Possible, Doug, Hey Arnold.
Did you say Ren and Stimpy?
No, but definitely, you know, Courage the Dog. You know, there's all these things. You can go on and on. There's some newer shows, The Regular Show, Adventure Time, The Amazing World of Gumball. I hear Steven Universe is fantastic. I haven't seen that. Gravity Falls has a huge following, both fan-wise and critically. So, like I said, the genre is not going anywhere. It's hugely popular. It's huge money for the networks, huge on merchandising, and they just live in, you know, perpetuity for sure. But you'd have to say it's SpongeBob is, you know, it's got to be the king there in that genre.
I would absolutely agree. What I've also noticed, at least, you know, I say recently, but I mean, in the last 15 to 20 years, is that because of the success of something like The Simpsons, you're getting a lot more efforts at prime time animation,
mm-hmm.
not just the Cartoon Network, not just Nickelodeon, not just, mm-hmm. you know, YouTube or again, you know, as we've talked about before, there's just so many outlets out there these days, but you've got things like Bob's Burgers and King of the Hill. I'll go back a few years, The Critic.
Yeah.
Which was a fun show. I like the fact that animation has made its way into prime time, or at least considered to be prime time. And I think it is something to be said for The Simpsons that they really did say, it's okay, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
What you're really doing is a TV series that happens to be animated,
mm-hmm.
not the other way around.
Yep. Yeah. It's, it's one of the most interesting parts of the television industry to watch, because there's really no boundaries as far as what their show or their characters can do. You're not worried about stunts. Your budget is relatively the same. You can have as many swing sets, you know, as you want, or as many, you know, location shots as you want. So there's really no reason not to keep expanding this new thing. American Dad is another show I like. South Park for sure. King of the Hill. Rick and Morty is a fantastic show if you haven't seen that. Even though we said you said Family Guy and Futurama, which are not, and Futurama, which is not on my list. Family Guy, I love. Family Guy gives me some of the biggest laughs of any show on television. Absolutely love it. Can you criticize it? Absolutely. But I think it's hilarious. And then some of the other things, BoJack Horseman, Archer, Robot Chicken, Invincible. You know, there's a lot of really, really cool, different looks at the world of animation. How do you approach storytelling through non-conventional characters, non-conventional means? It's really great stuff.
Yeah. In fact, you were talking about production and how you can have, you know, multiple guest stars or multiple sets or, you know, only what your imagination can hold. You know, one of the things I read about South Park, for instance, is that one of the ways they're able to be so topical and so timely is that because their production is so, I don't want to use the word unsophisticated, but it's so simple.
Yeah.
The animation style and technique, they can turn shows around so much quicker than conventional animation can. So they really can jump on an issue and then 3 weeks later have it on air and be very timely.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really interesting advantage that they have.
I've read in multiple locations, and I know one person who had a brief little foray into their world, that they turn around episodes in 6 days.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is absolutely, and that's a huge advantage, especially for people like Parker and Stone, who really do want to, you know, cast the slings and arrows at sacred cows. And if you can be timely, and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, the Simpsons are good at it, but the South Park is literally, if something happens on a Friday, you may see it in the Tuesday episode.
Yeah. And I don't think I've heard people say that, oh, well, the Simpsons have all these guest stars that they have to bring. Well, South Park does too.
Yeah.
Bob's Burgers is one that I know is hugely popular and everything. And I just have not seen enough of it yet. I've seen little clips here and there, and it's not that I'm averse to it or that I think anything's wrong. It's just, you know, how sometimes things line up with your viewing schedule, or if you're given a choice of three things, you choose the other thing. And, you know, it's always the odd man out. So I just haven't seen as much of it. But what I have seen, it's been pretty darn funny. I will say that.
I will agree with a lot of the titles that we've talked about and may talk about. I've sampled them maybe, a 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there as I'm going through, because, you know, as we get older in life, you don't have a ton of time to sit down and watch TV. And when you do, you want to watch the game or you want to watch a show that you love. But, you know, I have had a chance to kind of sample some of these things. And I've got to admit, I'm not crazy about 90% of them, but I also understand that they're not aimed at me. They're aimed at a generation younger than I am. And you know, I can see something like, you know, Robot Chicken becoming this generation's Bugs Bunny, you know, their touchstone. Right. As well.
Hilarious show. Love Robot Chicken. it's another show that there's at least two bits every episode that just make me almost cry. It's hilarious.
Seth Green.
That's right. All right. Well, let's start to maybe progress into our list. Now I know my list, you were just talking about, you can't see everything. I've actually, every single thing on my list I have seen in some shape or form. There's two that, one of them I've only seen the first season of, basically with a couple scattered episodes. And then the other one's been a while since I've watched it intently, but I have seen multiple episodes of it. So should we start?
Sure. Why not? Who goes first?
I go first this time.
All right.
So this is our 10 through fives. And my number 10, It's kind of a tie, but I'm only going to talk about one of them. I really, because of their worth and their value, I really couldn't separate the newer Rick and Morty versus the one that I'm going to talk about, which is the much older, the Pink Panther. The Pink Panther almost makes nobody's list, but it could not escape mine. One, because it delivers fantastic scenarios and plots and a lot of humor, and it does it with almost no dialogue. It's brilliantly done. It's definitely the idea of less is more, and it's very simple. It's precise. It's hilarious. Number nine for me is SpongeBob SquarePants from 1999 through present day, and Nickelodeon's crown jewel of their animated world. And you know what? It would have been a hit whether it was animated or not. I mean, granted, you've got these weird characters. But when you know your main character has been a balloon mainstay in the Thanksgiving Day parade for all these years, you know you've done something right.
That is an American cultural touchstone, yes.
It is. He's great. And you and I both know various people who play some of the lead voices on that show.
Yes. Yes, we
Maxie do. Brown, Bill Fagabaki, who was on the series Coach, and then Tom Kenny, of course, who plays SpongeBob.
Yeah. Isn't it fun when you watch a show and it dawns on you, hey, wait a minute, that's fill in the blank. And you know that. It's like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. Or you hear and you go, wait, that sounds like, and then you do your investigation. You go, oh, that is him.
That is him. Yes. Or her.
Right. Number eight for me is Archer. I stumbled on this about 3 years ago, and I didn't think it was going to make my list, but when I really thought about it, it is one of the best laughs for me. I cry throughout the whole 30 minutes on most of these episodes. I love it. You just take James Bond, enhance his womanizing and his drinking, and you give him a dysfunctional
office. That even possible?
Yeah. A dysfunctional office environment, which is run by his mother, and he's got a dysfunctional relationship with his mother also. It's great stuff. It's not just a spy spoof. It's hilarious. It's fantastic. Number seven for me is one of the classics of all time, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Great characters, great fun. For a kid back then to see that sort of animation, and they're discovering a mystery, and as hokey as they might be when we look back at some of them, you can't deny they are still fun, and Shaggy and Scooby will go down in animated history, two of the best cartoon teams ever. Number six is Batman, the animated series. Love this. I love superhero things, and I think this is by far the best. It's amazingly cinematic. Great characters and arcs for the characters. The voice work with Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill, who is fantastic in this. Just good storytelling, and it spawned Superman and the Justice League. And so great stuff. Number five is my only anime on it, and it's not the one you think it is. It's Avatar, The Last Airbender. It's an amazing story with great character arcs for about seven or eight or nine characters. They spend a lot of time with these different characters, and they don't shortchange any of them. It's a blending of mysticism and old Chinese tradition with fantasy and magic. It's done in in simplistic non-tech societies. So it's all these things playing against each other, but it's fantastic. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. But that's my number five. So Pink Panther, SpongeBob SquarePants, Archer, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Batman, the Animated Series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, my number 10 through fives. You're up, big guy.
Good list. And I think you may be getting close on the over and under, because we matched three of your first six. Not exactly, but we have common titles. I'll start at number 10. Number 10 for me is South Park. And I'm going to go back to the martini reasoning that I used for our classic cocktail show. I don't like martinis. I never have. I never will. But I can't deny what they mean to the drink culture. And I'm going to say the same thing about South Park. I'm not a fan of Parker and Stone. I think they're firebugs. I think they run out and set little fires and bring up little problems and then run away without offering any kind of solutions. But there's no denying that they have really become great satirists. They take on sacred cows. More often than not, their shots land. Again, I'm not crazy about it. I don't like their style. I was the production rep for Universal when they did Your Studio and You. And when that came out and was just so disrespectful to Universal that, you know, it just left a bad taste in my mouth. So Parker and Stone, I can respect you, but I'm not crazy. Number nine, our first common title, Batman, the Animated Series. It won Emmys. And to your point, the voice acting, absolutely terrific. They I think this was one of the first shows that really attempted to get the comic book authors involved with the production as well. So you got a lot of that same sensibility and that storytelling ability on the show. And I think that truly shone through. Number eight for me are The Adventures of Johnny Quest. One season, it probably instilled in me a love for adventure and, you know, globetrotting, hijinks and setting me up for being the fan of Indiana Jones that I am. Again, only one season. It was primetime ABC. And in doing research, here's something I found out. Otter was the voice of Johnny. Tim Matheson was the voice of Johnny Quest, which makes me love the show even more. Number seven, SpongeBob SquarePants. Unbelievably optimistic show. And that's what I really love about it. The characters are colorful. It's really unpretentious, and one website, and forgive me, I don't remember, so I can't give you credit, but they said any television series that could inspire the number of memes that it has to be top 10. So SpongeBob is my number seven. We both had anime in our first six. Mine is Speed Racer.
I thought so.
I was mesmerized by Speed Racer so much when I was a kid. I thought the car was fascinating. I could overlook the fact that there was a monkey and a little boy and you know, I wanted them to know that Rex Racer was Racer X. You know, that always bummed me out that they never put two and two together or that secret was never revealed. I love Speed Racer.
And for that reason, right there, that's why it stayed off my list. I'm kidding. That they never put it together.
And the fact that they talk like this. I mean, the even as a kid, you could see the backgrounds repeating, you know, as the style of animation. I mean, and I just took it. That's the way it was done. I didn't realize that they were trying to be cheap. That's just the way they wanted the show to look.
May I say that right there? That was actually one of the big tiebreakers to the contrary of why I didn't make my top 10 is certain things like that in the animation.
But you see, I don't know if that was just cheap production or if that's the style that they were trying to go for. So, as an 8-year-old, it didn't matter. I just love Speed Racer. Number five, another one you had in your top or your first six, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? You know, those crazy kids, we would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you guys, you meddling kids. you know, you could figure out who the villain was literally from the first 5 minutes, but the interplay between Scooby and Shaggy was always so much fun. And Daphne and Velma, you know, two of the first really realized female characters in a lot of these shows, you know, give them credit. And of course, you know, who doesn't use the phrase Scooby snack still when they're feeding their dog, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So those are my first six. That was South Park, Batman, the Animated Series, Johnny Quest, SpongeBob, Speed Racer, and Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
All very, very, very worthy things. Yeah, even though Speed Race and Johnny Quest aren't, they are both in my honorable mention. I guarantee you that. Well, let's move on to our
Mount Rushmore.
That's right. It's the Mount Rushmore, the final four. This is the ones that mean the most, that came to play, and that we thought are worthy of a special spot on our list.
Number four
for me is one of those shows that we talked about a little bit, and it's the penultimate show that has a bunch of different shows within it, and that's the Bugs Bunny show, sometimes known as the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show or Hour and the Looney Tunes show. It's whatever, but it's basically the Looney Tunes gang under the guise of Bugs Bunny as their leader. The exploits of this Wascally Wabbit, you gotta love him, and his legendary friends Porky Pig, Elmer Fudd, Daffy Duck, Sylvester and Tweety, Yosemite Sam, along with the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. I mean, such great characters, and there's even more than that. They really ingrained themselves as part of our American culture and later the international culture. They're just a huge part of animation history, and that's why they're on my list, thanks to the genius of the imaginations of Fritz Freleng and Chuck Jones and the legendary voice talents of Mel Blanc, who did most of the characters himself. They brought us, as we talked before, things like Acme Portable Holes, Tasmanian Devils, Angry Martians, and just so much fun. It was vaudeville and the silver screen mixed together with a crazy and total disregard for physical silence, like Kirk said. People should have been dead many, many times over, but they always bounce back and you wouldn't
have many times.
You wouldn't have it any other way. That was what spelled fun to a 6-year old like myself. It was Bugs and the Gang, you know, sticking their claim in our hearts back then and our minds, and they're here to stay, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Bugs Bunny.
Nice choice. And you of course, Bugs is on Mount Rushmore. Of course, Bugs is on Mount Rushmore and the whole gang. And I may talk about it in just a little bit. But my number four is the first primetime animated television series. Not a lot of folks remember or realize that it was loosely based on the Honeymooners, but the show is The Flintstones. 1960, they launched The Flintstones. It ran for 6 years. First primetime animated series, as I mentioned. And it really carved the way for everything that we've seen today in terms of primetime animation. It proved that animation could succeed in those primetimes. You didn't need The Man from U.N.C.L.E. You didn't need I Spy. You didn't need The Mothers-in-Law or I Dream a Genie. You could animate something, and it could be funny, and it could hold its own on the primetime schedule. Great characters. Again, based on the Honeymooners, and we've already seen what Jackie Gleason could do and how that kind of big oversized personality could be a perfect foil for the more sensible people around him. And that formula worked really well with the Flintstones as well. It ran for 6 years. It is still a mainstay in animation. You can probably find it running somewhere in the world at any given point in time. Spinoffs of it, Pebbles, Bam Bam. It's left a legacy. I think it's a terrific show. I still watch it every time I see it when I'm flipping channels. So number four for me is The Flintstones.
Very worthy choice. And it's definitely my honorable mention again. What is one of its strengths is what dinged it for me as far as just trying to find the difference between all these 20 or 30 shows that I thought were, you know, worthy. And the fact that it was basically recycled Honeymooners, not to a T, but you know what I mean, took away enough points to keep it off my list. But yeah, I think I've seen every episode 5 times over. It's a giant in the industry for sure.
Number three.
My number three is a newer show. It started in 2014. And I cannot say enough about this. It's much newer in my world, and that's BoJack Horseman from Netflix. 2014 through 2020. It's got to be one of the finest new animated shows out there. And since the ones that were made since 2000, I would put it as the best. Will Arnett and Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad fame. Will Arnett, we've known as Lego Batman and many, many other characters. They headline the voice talent. It's got a recognizable setting. You know, it's a alcohol dependent Hollywood has been. Okay, but he happens to be a horse. It's the real storytelling of this show that separates it from the other things for me. It deals with real issues, important themes that they really make work. Even with the excellent drama of the show, and it's almost more a drama than it is a comedy, but the humor is first class. And the inhabitants of BoJack's world are as confusing and creepy as they are wonderful. You've got people going alongside animals, talking fish. It's crazy world, but it's fantastic. It's hilarious and dramatic and sad all at the same time. Great turns and hidden nuggets and fun. It's BoJack Horseman. Fantastic stuff.
I give you a lot of credit for reaching into this century for one of your choices. I just couldn't do it. Not enough of a track record. I've seen a little bit of it. It wasn't my cup of tea. So that's totally on me. So I could be completely missing it. And anybody wants to make the argument, well, Kirk, this is now you being subjective as opposed to looking at this objectively. You're right. I just didn't feel comfortable about talking about it without having experienced more of it in that world. But I
think your comment is very fair to say, because I would recommend to anybody watch multiple episodes back to back to back, and you could jump then, you know, then say watch the first 5 or 6 of season one, then go and pick out a 3 or 4 run in season 2, season 3. And then you'll see the writing is long-term. The arcs are long-term. And it plays better when it's digested en masse, you know, or over a long period of time. It's a tough one to go in and just pick an episode here and there and go, wow, that's amazing. It's still good, but right. It's better altogether.
Right, right, right. Well, good for you for being a little bit more open to it. I also have to admit too, the art style isn't something that I find appealing or alluring. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to watch some of that as well. And I go through the same thing, because I used to collect comic books, and there were certain artists I liked and certain artists I didn't, and that would push me to or away from one of the books we were talking about.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
My number three is one that you had as your number four. And I'm actually creating a larger umbrella here. If you want to call it a cheat, you can, but I'm calling it the Looney Tunes Merry Melodies family. And you took some of my thunder by listing all the characters that we were introduced to in, you know, the Bugs Bunny show, the Porky Pig show, the Roadrunner show, the Merry Melodies show, you know, that started in 1960. So, I mean, these have been with us for almost 60 or more than 60 years. It's a franchise that has everything that you talked about, memorable characters that are still valid today. I mean, look at LeBron doing Space Jam 2, Michael Jordan doing the first Space Jam. Which shows that it is a franchise that has expanded far beyond its original, you know, short film world. I mean, it is now in comic books. It is in feature films. It is merchandise. It is theme parks worldwide recognition. So, you know, for these characters that started off as the kind of smartassy characters we wanted to be as kids, we wanted to be as sharp and as witty and as comebacky as Bugs Bunny, or you know, as smart as the Roadrunner, or you know, as angry as Yosemite Sam. These are all indelible characters, especially to those of us of a certain age. So for me, number three, second face on Mount Rushmore, are the Looney Tunes Merry Melodies gang.
I like how you said I'm gonna kind of do a cheat here.
Not a cheat. If you say Looney Tunes, you think of all of those characters, right? Judges? Not a cheat. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's a panel of two, and so gee whiz. Yeah, I think you're safe. Good stuff. Moving on.
Number two.
My number two was your number 10. But since I have no personal interaction with Stone and Parker, I don't have that to weigh on my conscience or anything. And I, as you started to allude to, I have tons of respect for what they do with the show South Park. It's that little show that doesn't take itself too seriously. You can find that disclaimer at the beginning of the show. That is hilarious. They drop a cookie right there. It definitely takes its view on society and the world seriously. However, the creation of Trey Parker and Matt Stone grew from this nothing like it, totally shocking pilot episode. And it's hard to find. Most people haven't seen the pilot episode, but I will tell you that there is a fight to the death between Jesus and Santa Claus in it. So there you go. But I remember when that broke, the show that I was working on, a couple of us and the writers in the writer room, we couldn't get enough of it. We had to watch it over and over again. It's one of the greatest animation giants of all time, the show itself. The style is unique. The animation is inspired by the paper cutout cartoons made by Terry Gilliam of Monty Python fame. The Americans look different than the Canadians. They use primary colors. They just look like little shapes and symbols. The language and humor is unique. It was the first weekly program to be rated TVMA for mature audiences only. Uses profanity, violence, sexual content. They're the norm of the show, but they do it well. The stories and the characters and messaging is unique. Through the shock value approach, its social satire and commentary are the basis here. It's presented through humor, but most episodes employ a purposeful theme, and they do it well again. Just one of the truly independently unique shows out there. I love it. It's South Park.
Yeah, I just can't with South Park. And there is a little part of me that still wants to say that animation and cartoons and such are meant for kids. I know they're not. Let's just get that out there right now. I know they're not. My head knows they're not, but my heart, it's hard for me to sing it. So when you get these little kids who are swearing and, you know, doing inappropriate things and all of the above, it's just it fingernails on a blackboard for me. It really, really is. So God bless you for putting it there. I know I'm in the vast minority in not putting it on Mount Rushmore, let alone just my top 10, but you know, good for you. Good for you.
That was the most insincere good for you I've ever seen. All right. What's your number two?
My number two has long been called a cult favorite. I don't know if that's quite the case. I think so many different generations can enjoy it for so many different reasons. It still continues to be enjoyed today by people all over the world. This is the Rocky and Bullwinkle Show, or the Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, the Bullwinkle Show, whatever you want to call it, as it morphed as it made its way through the television network, starting in 1961, and then you know moved to NBC in 63, and then ABC until 73. You know, it was rare. But the bottom line was, you had what was ultimately a variety show for cartoons, as we talked about a little bit earlier. Not only was it just Rocky and Bullwinkle, but you had Dudley Do-Right, you had the Fractured Fairy Tales, you had with Aesop and Sons, you had, you know, Mr. Know-It-All, you had all of these different elements that came together. But it really was Rocky and Bullwinkle taking on Boris and Natasha. And you can enjoy it as a 7-year-old for just the fun humor and the puns. And then as a 27-year-old, you could look back and go, wow, I can't believe they got away with that. And as a 47-year-old, you go, wow, that was politically astute. It was socially astute. It was funny. I mean, it really checked a lot of boxes. And it was like, you know, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. And that's what Rocky and Bullwinkle was. And I still think it's funny. I still think it's timely. It's another one of those shows that when it's on, I will watch it. So my number two face on Mount Rushmore is Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah, great show. It was definitely one of those must watch after school things for me all the time. I forgot about the Aesop Fables. Those are funny. Those were good.
And Fractured Fairy Tales. You know, William Conrad.
Well,
that's the narrator for a lot of this stuff. And Edward Everett Horton was the narrator for Fractured Fairy Tales. I mean, they had some really good legendary talent involved with this show. And come on, how many times did we drive by that statue of Bullwinkle on Sunset Boulevard, right across from the Chateau Marmont, the old Jay Ward Studios?
Mm-hmm. Moose and Squirrel.
Love it. Hey, Rocky, why don't you be pull a rabbit out of a hat? So. Not again.
One of the most misquoted lines by comedians all the time. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a insert joke here.
No pun intended.
All right. That brings us to our
number one.
And I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to be the same for both of us. And for me, it is 1989's The Simpsons, the king of Fox television. I see you nodding, so I won't talk about it too much. I'm just going to say what has always amazed me about the longevity of this. And you could have made this case even after it finished year three. This started as an interstitial on the Tracy Ullman show. It was just this little 2-3 minute thing that they showed on Tracy Ullman every week. And it's skyrocketed now to over 32 seasons. It's already been picked up for years 33 and 34, over 700 episodes. It is an amazing feat of any television series, let alone an animated television series. You know, and yes, that longevity is impressive, but sometimes you just got to pay homage to the longevity champ. But it's not just the longevity here. In Springfield itself, the Simpsons have given us this crazy world where the neighbors, classmates, and townspeople are now, they're all like our friends. We know them so well. So many characters, both fictional and spoofs on real people as well. It's one of the elements of the show that I like the best. It's led to specials, films, games, clothing. It's a merchandising power for sure. It's won 34 Emmys, 34 Annies, and a Peabody Award. Time Magazine named The Simpsons the century's best TV series. They have a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And though it still pulls in millions of viewers every week, The Simpsons is, in my estimation, and as Mr. Burns would say, excellent.
Just had to get that in there, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we've done, what, 28 episodes now?
Yes.
And this was the most obvious choice for number one on any of the topics we've ever done. I mean, you start with The Simpsons and then I mean, they just lap the field. You go from there, whether it's longevity, whether it's impact, whether it's the critical response, whether it's the popular response. I mean, you're talking check, 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 check all along. I love the quote that one website had where they said you could have a conversation entirely in Simpsons quotes at this point if you wanted to, because there's so much material and it's so much relevant material as well. And you know, they take their shots, you know, every now and then. I guess other networks started, like Capital Critters, and there were a couple of other animated primetime things that tried to be a little edgy, et cetera, that the networks are doing, and they all lasted a season. And in the next Treehouse of Terror episode that The Simpsons did, they showed all of those titles on tombstones in the opening credits.
Yep.
But yeah, it begins and ends with The Simpsons. It is in the running, not only for best animated show, which I think is a given, mm-hmm. it's in the running for one of the best television series ever. And again, I'll go to the martini thing. Mm-hmm. It's not my cup of tea. I don't watch The Simpsons. Sorry, Chris Ledesma, on a regular basis. But when I do, I enjoy it. And there's certainly respect for what they do. And obviously, they've gotten guest stars from all over the world. Everybody from U2 to James Taylor to Leonard Nimoy and Elizabeth Taylor. The list goes on and on and on. It has to be The Simpsons. There's just no two ways about it. Number one, Mount Rushmore. And again, we mentioned our friend Chris Ledesma, who was on with us to do a show last season. He's going to be the one guy that we know that is that rare person in Hollywood who has had one job for his entire career.
Yeah.
And that's just incredible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. I remember running into somebody, I think it was at work, and they were just saying, yeah, I've seen a bunch of different episodes of The Simpsons. So I'm thinking I'm just going to binge watch it from the beginning. You just hunker down there. You're going to sit down and watch that. And granted, this was a couple years ago. So at the time, there's still only 29 or 30 seasons, you know, but yeah, you better have a big bag of popcorn for that one.
Yeah. Or you're in quarantine.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Good list. So we matched on or had commonalities for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Great. And we only matched on one. Ooh, I look like a double winner. In fact, I don't look like it. I am a double winner.
Oh, you did. Nice job. Nice job. I'd like to say we set the odds pretty well there, too.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was very well done, I thought. All right. Yeah. Well, that brings us to our honorable mention, which is called
Unlisted, the sequel.
And as I mentioned, you know, there's a ton. So I'm not going to talk about these. I'm just going to mention what my Unlisted the sequel is. And from the classics, Rocky and Bullwinkle Show, The Flintstones, which are both on your list, and Johnny Quest as well. And also Spider-Man, the animated series. Love that. From kids, The Amazing World of Gumball, Samurai Jack, Gravity Falls, Fairly Odd Parents, and Adventure Time. From the adult world, Family Guy, Rick and Morty, which I actually has a tie for my 10, King of the Hill, and I'm assuming Bob's Burgers. I must admit I have to watch more of that. And then from the world of anime, Speed Racer, which was on your list, Dragon Ball Z, and Cowboy Bebop, which I've only watched a little of. It's a little hard for me to get into, but it's pretty dynamic, so I think I will try watching a little more of that. What about you? What's on your Unlisted the sequel?
Well, I'm first going to say, I think that's a bit of a cheat there. You got to list about a dozen different shows by...
I told you I have a problem.
You do have a problem. We've talked a lot about some of the shows that you know, don't make the list, as we mentioned a few of the very beginning things that wouldn't be on the list. The one season of Star Trek, mm-hmm. the animated series, would have been one that I'd have put on. But again, one season wasn't quite enough. It kind of was in the wake of the series. Now, granted, as a Star Trek fan, it was like water in the desert when it came on. And to be able to get the same voice actors, it felt like Star Trek, which that was the biggest thing they could do. So that is certainly, you know, probably primarily on there. I think, you know, Justice League, you know, all the superhero stuff that's been done, that's been kind of my jam. I like that kind of stuff mm-hmm. as well. Kimba the White Lion.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about. I loved Kimba. you know, and I can't remember an episode to save my life. I just remember the feeling I had watching it as, you know, a 6 and 7 year old. There's been some great stuff that's been out there, and I'm sure I'm leaving off, you know, a kajillion different shows. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to a break in just a minute here, and then we'll be back with the guest list and our special guest to talk more TV animated series. Just as a little disclaimer, we recorded this guest list segment yesterday, and we encountered some technical difficulties resulting in a little bit lower sound quality, so we apologize for that. It's still very listenable. Don't worry about it, and I think you're going to love our guest, so we'll be back in a minute.
Hey, I'm Jillian Clare, the host of the podcast Thanks for Coming In. I've accumulated some pretty crazy audition stories over the past 20 years, and so have my friends.
And I was like, you know what? No, not going to do this.
And then Disney calls and is like, we need you to come test for the Ant-Man movies.
I didn't know if my scene was going to get cut or not.
Ooh, I could play that.
Tune in every Thursday to hear your favorite actors tell the funniest, saddest, and most cringeworthy audition stories. Sometimes even the one that got away. Thanks for Coming In is available on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. And now it's time for
the guest list.
And today on the guest list, our guest is a 3-time Emmy nominated actor. At 14, he crashed a record session for the famous Mel Blanc, pretending to be Blanc's assistant to watch him in action. After that, he began studying voiceover with every VO coach LA had to offer, which also included 2 years at the Meisner Acting Conservatory and 3 years of improv study with the Groundlings. He also mixed in the stint as a tour guide with Universal Studios and has become a very famous voiceover actor ever since. His voice is heard in thousands of commercials, promos, games, animated series, and specials. He's voiced dozens of animated features, including Minions, Despicable Me 3, Wreck-It Ralph, Trolls, Tangled, Cars, A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., WALL-E, Toy Story 2 and 3, and Up. For over 20 years, he's voiced Luke Skywalker in dozens of games, as well as 3 Robot Chicken Star Wars specials. Recent series works include Star Wars The Bad Batch, Marvel's Avengers Assemble, Animaniacs, and he's spent over 32 years voicing Porky Pig. We've known him for many years. He's a good friend of ours. He's a very talented guy, one of the best in the business, one of the busiest guys in the business. He is Bob Bergen. Hello, Bob. Good to see
Robert.
You.
How are you guys? I'm bored listening to my life. So, but thank you very much. Thanks for that nice intro, and I actually sent it to you, so thank you for reading it.
And we're glad you sent it to us, and we've been well aware of your accolades and your career. And actually, the thing that's not listed, I didn't say, one of the things that I've always loved about you most is you're good friends with Lily Tomlin, and that holds a lot of weight with me.
Oh, well, you know what? I am, and I've known Lily for quite some time. She was my co-governor at the TV Academy, and she's like one of those crazy talented people who is also, like me, painfully shy. Right. And put her on stage and give her a camera. She's terrific. But just outside of that, she's like, I don't want to talk about myself. And I'm the same way. But yeah, she's a very, very sweet dear friend.
Yeah. You know, Bob, it has been really, it has been a delight since Steve and I met you back in 1984 or whenever it was. Yeah. It really has been just a delight watching a lot of our contemporaries, yourself included, have the success they've had in the industry. I mean, it's been just remarkable. You know, every time you watch, you know, something or hear your voice, I mean, it's just a nice reminder that, you know, good people can really succeed in the industry. To get into it, though, let me ask you, what has changed from the very first session you ever did to now? I know that there's obvious things. COVID, you know, obviously affected where you do it. I'm more interested in the process or the roles or what is expected of a voiceover performer.
It's a great question, and you touched upon the COVID, so I'm not going to go there. It's obvious. I got my first job in 1982 when there were only 3 networks airing Saturday morning cartoons and very few animated features. Today, there are primetime cartoons. There are streaming cartoons. There's cable networks devoted to 24/7 animation. Every major motion picture studio has a thriving animation department. There are games. There's more content today than there was when I got into the business. It was more difficult to get into the business when I did because they didn't need me. They had Mel Blanc, they had June Foray, they had Don Messick, they had Frank Welker. So for people who are looking to get into the voiceover industry, especially animation and games, Never have there been more opportunities, but there's also more competition. It's because everybody and their mother has a home studio. You don't necessarily have to live in the major markets to pursue a voiceover career. I mean, you guys, I used to, there was a payphone in the Leave It to Beaver house, and I would have a pager. I'm like, that's my agent. I'd say to the driver, I've got to make a phone call. So I would walk off the tram and make a payphone call to my agent to find out about a callback. One time, I think it was because I booked the movie Gremlins that was shot in the back lot. Bottom line is today, it's so much easier. You know, we've got cell phones, we've got texts, we've got computers. The accessibility to the industry is much, much easier. We all have home studios. That's the big difference. That's the major, major difference. But the craft of this, styles change. You know, if I'm auditioning for a Fox primetime series, it's going to be a different style. I'm going to shift gears than like PBS Kids for preschoolers. But acting is acting is acting, and it always will be.
Very much so. Now, you mentioned when you got your start, there was just the three networks and the Henson Company was doing their thing, and of course, and so forth. Because of when you started, and now, even though you work all the time still, as a fan, do you have an affinity toward the older classics or the things when you came in? You know, is it the things that you learned from or the things that you were big when you first started getting your own professional work? Or is it mixed throughout the ages?
As a fan, I'm still a fan of the classics much more than the contemporary. I will say this, that, you know, I've been fortunate to have worked on a lot of Pixar films. And every time I would drive to Disney, I'd go to myself, I'd say, there's no way that it can be as good as the last one. Don't be disappointed if the writing's not as good. And each time it's better and better and better.
Right.
But this is an entity who basically said to the suits in the tower, don't look behind our backs. Let us do the films that we want to do. I think that's happening more and more today. And I think that's happening a lot with people who are doing their own content, not necessarily for a major studio, but YouTube or their own YouTube channel. There's a creative freedom today, and there's an audience for this creative freedom that we never saw before because we didn't have this machine, you know, called a computer and the internet. So that's a game changer. That's a big game changer. But as a fan, yeah, I still like the classic stuff better. As for entertainment, that's just me.
Yeah, I know Kirk and I tend to hold a special place for the things that came before, you know.
Let me ask the question. Is it safe to say that we can look at animation over the last 40 to 50 years as before Simpsons and after Simpsons?
Yeah, big time. And the reason is because The Simpsons was the first primetime cartoon in decades when it debuted in the mid-80s. They tried other cartoons. They tried like Family Dog, and there were a variety of primetime cartoons. But The Simpsons was a game changer in the writing. They put Fox on the map. I mean, if it weren't for The Simpsons, Fox would not exist. And I can remember early on, it was like, ooh, you got a show on Fox? That's a bummer. You know, the day you're like, I got a show on Fox, yay! So it's a whole different world. But I do agree with you, Kirk. The Simpsons was a game changer.
Because I look at it now as cartoons and animation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of our favorites, the early Looney Tunes stuff, the Rocky and Bullwinkle, the Flintstones, the Jetsons, even Speed Racer. You know, to me, those are cartoons. I enjoyed those as a kid. But mm-hmm. you look at stuff like BoJack Horseman or mm-hmm. Archer yep. or any of these. Now we're talking about, really, these are TV shows that just happen to be animated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell you that even when I work on an animated feature, almost every single time the director will say, it just happens to be a cartoon. It's a movie. And the same thing with, I had dinner last night with a friend of mine who's an animation voice director. And she said, look, I'm not looking for wacky zany for most of my stuff. I'm looking for that BoJack, wry, conversational, great acting, chemistry. I always tell my animation voiceover studio students, watch cartoons, because they're not necessarily looking for Animaniacs for this particular one. They might be looking for something more along the lines of The Office, which is just great acting, conversation, character-driven, that happens to be drawn.
Mm-hmm. That's a great comparative, using The Office, because it is. Yeah. It really is a collection of character actors that are doing these roles, safe to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we do everything solo, you know, because of COVID. But we were doing that even before COVID because we're all really busy people. So we don't always have the other actors to work off of. I'm doing one show right now. The first season of The Bad Batch, which is a Star Wars show on Disney Plus. They had the entire cast together on Zoom when we started doing the COVID recordings. So we could work off of each other. And it was just, because acting is reacting. It was just so much more satisfying as a performer. But I would say 99% of what I'm doing right now, I'm recording by myself. And if it is an ensemble thing like a community or an office sort of feel, you need a good director and you need a really good editor to make it sound like we are all in the same universe. And they are very good artists, those people who put these things together.
That's a really interesting take. I don't think a lot of people put two and two together like that, that you're not acting in a room with other people. You really are doing it in a vacuum.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, all the animated features I've ever done. I did a film called The Emperor's New Groove, where it's me and Patrick Warburton. Like, he played Kronk, I played a squirrel, and we had the greatest on-screen chemistry. We did a sequel and 3 years on a series. We've never been in a studio together in our lives.
So, never met him.
Oh, I met him. I met him at the Annie Awards a few years ago. We were presenting together, and I said, I played Bucky in Emperor's New Groove, and he looked at me and he goes, I thought Bucky was a sound effect. And I went,
yeah, is that a compliment or not?
Son of a bitch, I'm in the credits.
Okay, now back to the TV series and what do you take as the more important thing, or do they work as a perfect blend? What attracts you to a show? Is it purely the writing? Is it the characters and the actual versatility of the voice work? Is it the animation itself, or is it a combination of all?
I'm going to add one more to that list. I'm going to say, is it a track record of the producers that are offering the gig too?
There have been some jobs that are like, well, that pays the bills. Yay. And there have been some where I'm like, okay, I don't tell them this, but I would pay them to do this. This is so good. So for me as an actor, it starts with the words. You know, if the script is brilliant, it acts itself. And, you know, the way we record cartoons today is we do every line ABC, three takes. And we take it any direction we want to. And the director will say, ooh, I want to print B. Or I like where you went with C. Let's do three more along those lines. Pure creative freedom. The voice directors that we work with, some of them have been around since my first days in a studio. And the reason is because they're so good. And a good director has to translate producer for actor and actor for producer. And they do a great job. And they're our handholder. And they're our best friends. You know, actors who are terrified of casting directors, they really are our best friends. They want us to get the job. But again, for me, it is 100% the words, the writing. I have had showrunners who I'm like, wow, you guys, thank you for, like, I'll give you an example. I do a lot of episodes of Help Me, Robot Chicken, which I've been doing since season one. And that's Seth Green. And Seth Green, I mean, you guys, when we were tour guides, Artie Glackin and I babysat Seth Green. I mean, we go way back. And he is quite possibly one of the best voice directors in the business because he's also an actor. He's mm-hmm. also an amazing writer because he knows these characters. He knows comedy. He knows timing. You know, when things just fit together in that little perfect, you want to bottle that. But you can't expect it every time. Otherwise, you'll just be disappointed.
Right.
I mean, it's almost as you described. It's almost like the voice director is almost like the executive producer in the sense that they have to know every role, where it's all going, what's happening. As you're reading your parts, they're trying to think, okay, what else is going to be in this scene? Who else is doing the lines? How are they going to read it? How's this going to dovetail into it? Is that fair to say?
Not only is it fair to say, it's 100% accurate. And the voice director, let's say we're doing 26 episodes and we're on episode 3. Well, they may know a story arc that's coming up later on. Mm-hmm. And they have to adjust you in a certain way that may not feel organic in that moment. But there's a method to their madness. They know what they're doing.
And it's interesting because you said the lines come first, which tells me that the lag time between what you do and when it comes out mm-hmm. is significant.
Yeah, it's about a year for episodic cartoons for TV, and it's about 2 to 5 years depending on the budget for an animated feature. But I'll tell you, when you record an animated feature, it's sort of like when you shoot a movie. It's out of sequence.
Right.
And I only see the pages I'm in. They never give me the entire script. So then I'll see the film and I'm like, oh, I would have played that so differently if I'd known that information. But again, you rely on the director to go, yep, that cut, print, that's perfect. We're going to move on. Okay.
Right. Well,
wow.
You've worked for some of the very giants of this industry with Warner Brothers and Disney Pixar and the Henson Company and so forth. Let's start to transition, not to your list just yet, but toward that direction. Of those old classic cartoons that you said you still hold near and dear to your heart, let's talk a little about the differences, you know, between Bugs Bunny and Looney Tunes, Woody Woodpecker, Popeye, the Flintstones, you know, mm-hmm. Scooby-Doo, things like that. What makes those things so relevant in your life as a viewer?
The only cartoon that you mentioned that was intentionally made for children is Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
Looney Tunes, Popeye, Woody Woodpecker. These were all made for adults, by adults, for adults. Tweety debuted in a cartoon called A Tale of Two Kitties in front of the movie Casablanca.
Yeah.
And every Warner Brothers movie had a cartoon before it. Every Disney feature, I'm sorry, every Paramount picture had a cartoon before it. The Fleischer Popeyes, as far as I'm concerned, all-time favorite. The black and white Fleischer Popeyes. Those were recorded differently. They did the animation first, and then the actors would watch the cartoons. That's why Popeye mumbled without his mouth moving. Because Jack, who played Popeye, would see the character looking around. He'd be like, hey there, what's new around here? Oh, there. It was all ad-libbed. But made for adults. Cartoons started to be associated with children when television needed content. And they didn't have a budget because they didn't know what the heck this box in the living room was going to be. So they're like, well, we got all these Popeyes and these Bugs Bunnies and these Woody Woodpeckers. Let's just air that stuff. And all of a sudden, they now had children's programming. Cut to, the Flintstones was a primetime cartoon, very successful. Went off the air in the mid-60s. In 1969, Hanna-Barbera debuted Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? That was the game changer for Saturday morning cartoons because it was their version of the Archies. Archies came first. For some reason, there was a music montage throughout each episode. That's mm-hmm. what the Archies did. That's what the Monkees did.
Monkees, I was going to say, yeah.
Exactly. The Archies was the answer to the Monkees. Nothing's original, people. You know that. Nothing in the industry is original. And that started what we consider, you know, the heyday of Saturday morning cartoons. Yeah, ABC, CBS would air the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show, the classics. But there was also, you know, the Funky Phantom and new Pink Panther cartoons based on the theatrical shorts.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definite. And then the death of Saturday morning cartoons was Cartoon Network. Because kids didn't have to wait till Saturday morning. They could watch it every day. So then NBC started doing sitcoms, Saved by the Bell. They started, and they, back when we were kids, they had HR Puff and stuff, and they were doing some live action stuff. But yeah, now I think Saturday morning on the major networks are like, you know, The Weeknd Today, The Weeknd Good Morning America, because kids have other, you know, platforms to watch their cartoons.
Oh yeah. And then that first Friday in September, when the new season and the lineup for Saturday morning is going to be, and they had that special show either hosted by the Brady Bunch or somebody. And that was must see TV for us kids back then.
That was a national holiday for me. That was awesome. September. I still think there'd be value for networks to go back to debuting everything in that 1 week in September, just to bring eyeballs to it, make an event out of it.
Yeah. I agree 100%, but TV's too vast. I mean, you know, nobody watches anything in real time. Everything's on demand. But TV is just constantly evolving. And again, going back to what I said earlier, animation has never been healthier.
Yeah. And it shows no sign of slowing down. It's growing faster.
Now, as we talked about before, I didn't realize how much stuff is out there right now that is so well received that I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Because it airs in different places, or I'm just not aware of it, or it's only been on for a season or two, or I didn't realize how well it was being received. I mean, it's remarkable to your point. It is hard to keep up. Yeah.
it's hard for me to keep up. And what, for me, if I have an audition for an existing show, I can go online and check it out and go, oh, I got a feel of this. And then I'll go to IMDb and go, oh, it's that producer who also did this, the casting director. Oh, she also did this. Okay. So I can get kind of a feel of the style of the show. If it's a pilot, I'll still ask my agent, who's casting it? Who's the showrunner? What network? What time of day? Because that's going to help me kind of pinpoint my choices. Mm-hmm. Not no guarantee, but it's going to help me make those choices. So, but then I'll see, like, I'll be like, is this new? Oh, no, it's been on the air for 5 years. I'm not the audience, so I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is all fascinating. And as Kirk and I were talking before with guests like you, and we had Chris Ledesma on last year, the music editor for The Simpsons, that we could do a whole double episode just with you guys.
But I want to know your shows now, because I'm really interested. After giving mine, I don't want to spoil it, but I want to see how close I came or Steve came.
So let's start with your reveal on your list. Let's go from number 10 through number 5.
Okay, Doug. Well, number 10, boy, Kirk, you read my mind, buddy. Number 10 for me is the Flintstones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was the most successful primetime cartoon, and it was based on the Honeymooners. They denied it at Hanover, but it really was. If you have time, you want to hear why Barney Rubble's voice changed 3 times in the life of the first run of the Flintstones, I can tell you. Number 9 is the Jetsons. It was the futuristic answer to the Flintstones.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do that many. They only did 13 episodes of the Jetsons. And it reran over and over and over again. And back in the 80s, they did a whole new incarnation of it with the same cast. Number 8, Speed Racer. It, for me, put anime on the map. And I didn't even know it was anime. I just thought it was a really cool show, but they talked weird. And then every once in a while, they would have an extra mouth flap and go, ha, for no reason, but because the English translation didn't work. Number 7, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? As I said earlier, it just put Saturday morning cartoons on the map. Number 6, the 1960s Spider-Man. Does whatever a spider can. That one, that put Marvel and superheroes on the map. And by the way, all of my lists, my top 10 lists, have a common theme, which I'll tell you about in a little bit. And number 5, the animated Star Trek.
It
was 73. Filmation had the same writers from the original series. It was flat Filmation animation, but the writing was so great, and it actually launched the movie franchise. It was actually supposed to be a series again, a live-action series, and the pilot for the series became Star Trek the Motion Picture. So those are my top 5.
That's a great list. I'm so glad to see Speed Racer on your list.
I feel very vindicated right now because we match a lot. We do match a lot, yeah.
All right, well then, as good as that list is, I'm dying to know what your Mount Rushmore is. So let's get into your final 4.
Number 4, Batman the Animated Series.
Nice.
Yep. Batman Animated Series, for me, because of Mark Hamill, because how do you take the Joker, who had been played by the iconic Cesar Romero, and then you got Jack Nicholson doing his version of it, and make it fresh and different? And boy, is Mark brilliant. Such a brilliant actor. And the writing was so good. As far as I'm concerned, not made for kids. College kids, adults love that show. And it also launched this new generation of both Marvel and DC appreciation. Mm-hmm. Number 3, The Simpsons. Kirk brought that up earlier. Absolutely a game changer in the landscape of animation. All right. Now, number 2, this is the only one I'm involved in. And I tried not to be self-serving, okay?
It's okay.
I know. But Looney Tunes cartoons that's currently on HBO Max, it has a feel of the 1930s and 40s classic Looney Tunes. The character designs, full orchestra score, amazing full animation. And I rival anybody to go, that looks new, because some of them look just like Bob Clampett, Tex Avery. Sure. Number 1, you guys want to guess?
South Park?
Nope. Although South Park would be number 11.
11?
Yeah, definitely.
Bugs Bunny Road Show.
Nope. Wow. Hold on. Tom and Jerry.
Nope. Because those were the after.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That takes out the MGM show. Okay. Animated.
You got me. I'm stumped.
SpongeBob.
Nope.
Okay.
I do enjoy SpongeBob, and Tom Kenny's a good buddy. All right, ready?
Yeah.
Rocky and Bullwinkle.
That was my next one. That's on my list too. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep. Rocky and Bullwinkle, which was basically just, and it was a primetime adult cartoon. It was a complete satire on the Cold War. As a kid, I didn't get it. I didn't understand why there was this Russian dude and this playing goose and a squirrel. I just kind of thought it was a fun cartoon. And then I saw it as an adult, and I became very good friends with June Foray, who was Rocky the Flying Squirrel, and I knew Bill Scott, and I got a lot of the backstory of where they got this comedy from. And again, they were making shows for themselves, nobody looking over their shoulder. They're like, you can't say that. And they said, they got away with so, about 1958, 59, they got away with so much stuff, and it holds up today. Even though it's completely politically dated, it holds up today.
Yeah, because good satire is good satire. For me, I loved it because it was also a smorgasbord, because it was like a variety show. You know, you'd have the Rocky and Bullwinkle, and then you'd move over to, you know,
Dudley Do Right.
You were like, exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's a great list.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, was there a reason some of the newer stuff, like the Archers or the BoJack Horseman, aren't in there? I mean, one of the things I put down as my criteria was longevity and influence. And, you know, even in 15 or 20 years, you can't have the same influence and longevity as a Rocky and Bullwinkle or as a Flintstones, as a. Right.
I looked at this, and by the way, I went from like 30 down to 10. Mm-hmm. But I looked at all of these and I went, in some way, they're all still with us. In some way, they continued with different incarnations. In some way, they started based on something before, like the Flintstones, based on the Honeymooners. Spider-Man had not been animated, but hello, have you seen the box office for the new Spider-Man movie?
Yeah. I mean,
Star Trek, Looney Tunes. These are all things that have, Simpsons is still with us, you know, 30 years later, the longest running sitcom ever. Every single one of these on this list has stayed with us since it debuted and will probably continue on in some way when we're all gone.
Absolutely. And that's a pretty good closing note right there. I think that puts it all in perspective very well. Well, Bob Bergen, we cannot thank you enough for making time to be with us. On a personal level, it's just great to see you.
Always good to spend time in your company, Bob. We got to do it in person now.
Guys, it's still to me, after I don't know how many years, very weird to hear you say my professional name.
No.
It's very weird for this group of my life to say Bergen. It just feels awkward.
Because for people looking is Don Smith. Anyway, just kidding.
Bob, so good to see you. Thank you for spending time with us. And this has been such a great conversation. I hope we get to do it again.
Sounds good.
Thank you. And I would say best of luck to you, but you're like the last guy who needs good luck.
We all need a little luck. I'll take it.
All right. Good.
All right. Drinks are on me next time we get together. Happy holidays, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
That was great. Bob is one of those guys, as I mentioned, you can just listen to his stories from the inner workings of these things and the behind the scenes stuff forever. He's seen a lot.
he has. And I agree. I think it is so cool that group of people that we became friends with almost 40 years ago to see so many of them go into the industry and have success like yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Mine is, you know, a smaller degree, but you know, we have friends who are writers and directors and actors and have just done some really good stuff. And I'm always, always, always grateful and gladdened when I see that success realized each time it happens. You know, Tony Winters is in National Champions, the movie that just got released.
Right.
And it was great seeing him on the big screen.
Yep. No, there's that whole circle that we were around that so many people have gone very far in their areas, and it is nice to see. You're very right. Well, that about does it for this week. Please join us for next episode, which will be bucket list destinations. That's kind of those, you know, 10 places you got to see before you die sort of episode. It's going to be a lot of fun. You'll need to catch this annual travel episode of ours.
And you can catch that episode anywhere you get great podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or wherever you go to get your good podcasts, you can find Populist. We are a member of the Buzzsprout community, and Populist is a vintage year production.
And wherever you listen to Populist, help us grow the show, please, by leaving a 5-star rating and a positive review if you're so inclined. We thank you for doing so. It definitely helps us grow the audience. You can find us on Buzzsprout at populist.buzzsprout.com and on facebook.com/populistpod and Twitter at populist_pod. All right, dude. Good show.
Great show.
And we got a major holiday coming up. So
yeah, stay safe, everybody. Be good. And we will see you in 2022.
That's right. Happy New Year to all our wonderful listeners. We love you and thank you for your support. And we will bring more wonderful stuff to you in 2022.
Stay safe.
Bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.